vestigial wings that don't function. And I saw something the other day in that NOVA program that was on television on Did Darwin Get It Wrong? Where they had four wings on these flies, and they want to say that that's probably what the common ancestor had. Four functional wings instead of two. Now, this thing could not fly that way. It wasn't flying around with these four wings. It was hobbling because it couldn't use them. It was almost as bad as having no wings. But they've done all, they have beat on this thing. They have mutated it in every way possible. You know, they've made it too, they put it in freezing conditions and too hot conditions and chemically altered it and beat it with sledgehammers to see what they could get as changes in the offspring. And that's it right there. You can get bar-eyed and red-eyed, and you can get long hairs and short hairs and things like that. And you know how long that's been going on, and they never have come up with a bumblebee. Now, you think about it. My point is serious. Here's your wild type. They mutate, and they change. And they breed for certain characteristics from the wild type, and they get all of these variations. And what have they demonstrated? Change within certain limitations. That's all they have ever shown with the hundreds of thousands of generations that they've gone through. Plenty of generations to try to make that fly into something that it wasn't, or move it backwards to whatever it was before it was a fly. And they've never done that. So what I'm saying is, there is scientific evidence to support the special theory of evolution, but not the general theory of evolution. And if you accept the general theory of evolution, it will be a matter of faith, just like accepting the Genesis account. And whichever one seems most reasonable to you, that's the one you ought to go for. But I think we need to stop presenting to students one interpretation of the evidence when we get into those realms of faith, and not presenting the other. Now, I presented this at the University of Florida in a public forum like this, where all of the graduate students and faculty in biology and psychology were able to come. And pretty much on the basis of that, I got my grade in the course, because I was taking a, what you would have to call a minority view at the time. And they gave me my A, and they gave me my degree, and I went on to get my doctorate. And I went on to teach it this way at the University of Florida, in classes where I was evaluated by students every quarter that I taught it. I mean, I can actually go back and show you whether the students liked it or not. And they did. Never had a bit of trouble with it, but I would today. Now they would say, David needs to be dismissed because he's closed-minded. Now, you're going to have to judge for yourself whether you think I'm closed-minded. You're going to have to judge for yourself whether you think I have competently presented the science that is involved. Okay? But my whole point on this is that it isn't a question of evidence. Scientific evidence does not support the general theory of evolution. That is nothing but an interpretation of evidence, which I also have the right to interpret. If I want to do my interpretation because of the Gilgamesh epic, that's my business. If I want to do it because of what the Bible says, that's my business. I got a lot of places to go to look for reasons to interpret it that way. And I resent people saying that I'm not an honest scientist because I have chosen to do this particular point of view. And I will defend myself on that. And I will defend any child who is put into that position, and I think we need to do that. Now, the trouble is, a lot of times by the time the kid gets to school, they've never had anything like this, and they're just lost, and they don't know how to answer it. And what do? They get kind of shaky, and I can't answer that, and they may be kind of half-hearted in their service to the Lord after that, because they've always got this doubt in the back of their mind. Well, I tell you something, I think there's an answer to it. And I have never made a presentation like this, not once, where somebody did not come up to me privately afterwards and say, that has bothered me for 20 years. Nobody knew it. But it has bothered me, in my view of the scripture, for 20 years, it has kind of made me unsure. But that answers it. That approach answers it. And that's why people are trying to get me now to go on and put this down on videotape and in print so that other people have access to it. Now, this is not all original. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I just think that coming from being an evolutionist gave me an advantage. All right, because I knew I was honest. And I knew I wasn't just trying to overlook the evidence. You know, and it kind of forced me to look at things that sometimes I might not have looked at. I might have just poo-pooed and pushed off to the side and said, that's not important. You know, and maybe, you know, I thank the Lord for that opportunity. Now, it's hot, and I've talked long enough. And I got more room to move around than you do. And I know that you've got to have some questions about this. Or even about the biblical thing that I would use in support of this, which I have not really gotten into. Like, why I'm not a theistic evolutionist. Why I do believe that it was six literal days in the creation. Why I do believe it was a worldwide flood, etc. Things like that, you know, that you might have questions. From the Bible. Yes.
Okay, let me, just for the sake of the tapes that we're making for a number of people, let me repeat the question. I'm not sure I heard it all, but you're asking about the 24 days of creation being literal 24-hour, six days of creation. All right.
Such a nice tool. I hate not to use it.
Notice he didn't use his cup, though.
Thanks. I'm doing better. I mean, I was doing better today. But I am dry. Okay, I believe that they were literal days for the same reason that I believe that there were three literal days between the Lord's death and his resurrection. Okay, this is what I presented to the professor of Old Testament at Georgetown College, who is a theistic evolutionist and believes in the long days, that those days represent long periods of time. You have to determine whether the word day in the Greek or the Hebrew is a 24-hour period on the basis of the context of the passage. Because the word can be used in other ways. I mean, we all talk about in our grandfather's day or in the good old days. My grandfather's day is probably the common one. And what do we mean by that? We're not talking about a 24-hour day, are we? We're talking about a generation, a period of time, a longer period of time than the 24-hour day. So why is it that we believe that there were three literal days with reference to the Lord's death, burial, and resurrection? You look for certain things in the context. Do they number the days? Do you have day one, day two, the first day, second day, things like that, where they specifically use a number? Do you have references to periods within the day, like the watches of the day or night? Do you have reference to light and dark? Or sun and moon and things like that. And when you do, you can be fairly assured then that the day you're dealing with is a 24-hour day. Well, now if you do that with the Hebrew word yom in the Old Testament, the Genesis account has reference to a numerical listing, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh days, as reference to light and darkness, and the morning and the evening. It has everything in the context that you'd ever need to think of it as a 24-hour day. So I know this at least, that the writer was trying to get across that God created in six literal days. And one other thing I'd like to drop in on top of that is the fact that in Exodus, I believe in the 20th chapter, when Moses is rehearsing with the people some of the things that have happened, and he establishes the Jewish week of seven literal days, 6 days and then a day of rest. he refers back to the creation week as his source. And nobody misunderstands that the Hebrew week was intended to be 24-hour days. And to me, every contextual argument you could ever make for it being a 24-hour day is in existence in the passage. And that's how I answer it. And the Old Testament professor did not even argue with me. That's where I thought I'd get some argument. He might not have known the science, but I'd stepped into his area then. But he didn't argue with me. Yes, sir?
My question is, if you compare to the day,
That's a real good point, and I wish I'd had the time to go through the young Earth, old Earth, and all of the radiocarbon dating methods. Let me just point something out. I got it here somewhere. I'm going to pull the whole folder, and I'll find it. The basic idea is that if both trees and humans have a common ancestor, that ancestor had to live a long time ago. Okay, that's the basic evolutionary idea. And that's why, as people began to accept the general theory of evolution, they began to look for longer and longer periods of time. All of the dating methods up to that point were relative dating methods. Okay, nothing absolute. But when they found radioactive dating, they thought they found an absolute way of dating. And the idea is that if you take a piece of radioactive material, supposedly, you cannot change its decay rate. These electrons come off, and in a certain number of years, half of it will be gone. In that same number of years, another half will be gone. In that same number of years, another half will be gone. Okay? With carbon-14, the half-life is around 5,400 years and something, and I don't remember exactly, which is what's shown here. You start out with an original clump, if you will, of radiocarbon-14. And in about 5,000 some years, half of it will be gone. In double that number of years, you'll have about a fourth left. And the effective dating for radiocarbon is about 20,000 years, if it's all accurate. Okay? There is scientific evidence that it's not. The basic assumption is that you can stomp on it, you can throw it in a volcano or drop it in a glacier, and you won't change the rate of decay. You know, you can give it a licking and it keeps on ticking. I mean, that's exactly what we're saying from a scientific point of view. Okay, Arthur Holmes said uranium may have disintegrated in the past exactly the way it does now, or it may have been faster or slower. What that would do, if it could be speeded up or slowed down, is it would throw out all radioactive dating methods, period. It would just simply throw them out, because the fundamental assumption would be broken. Now, what happened is a fellow by the name of Robert Gentry, who was a physicist, was studying this, and he says that he undertook the study of pleochroic halos, which is where you ought to see this, if it ever happens. Faster or slower, it ought to show up in the pleochroic halo of the rock. And I'll tell you what that is. You slice a rock so thin that you can put it under black light, and if it has a radioactive particle in it, there will be a halo of color, a very characteristic halo of color, out around it in the rock, under that black light. That's a pleochroic halo. All right? I don't know all of the science involved in that. All I know is that Gentry was a physicist who started studying those to prove that it had never changed in the past, that radioactive decay always occurred at the same rate. All right? And what he found out was that it probably was faster or slower in the past, and I can't give you all of the details of the science here on that. But that's his conclusion. I'll tell you this, though. that in the Arkansas case, this was the one piece of scientific evidence that Judge Overton thought was the strongest thing that the creationists had even presented in that case. Now, Robert Gentry has been relieved of his position at Oak Ridge since he testified down there, which I think is very interesting. Just like this Bergman fellow, this biologist, has been denied tenure. You know, how would you prove that it was related to taking a position on creation? You know, I know from my own experience that it could be. Now, the second thing I'd point out about that is that you don't get the same dates when you do it. And the best example of that for me, the one I thought was most significant, had to do with the Apollo moon sample. Okay? Everybody would pretty much agree that the Apollo moon samples ought to be the same date. What they did... I got to turn that off. You'll never do that. What they did is they dated those rock samples from the moon every which way they could. You can understand why. You know, they were trying to figure out various things about theories about how the moon came into existence and how old it was. And what happened was that the moon samples, they were dated by the uranium-lead-thorium method, the agglutinate method, potassium-argon methods, and they gave ages that went anywhere from 2 million years to 28 billion years. And that, to me, is discordant enough for me to question those methods as an absolute method. You know, if we have so-called absolute watches in here that never vary and always give you the exact time, then why is it that a bunch of us don't have the same time on our watch? Well, maybe the watch is not absolutely correct like everybody assumed it was. You know, and if your little chronometer says that it's last Tuesday and somebody else says that it's next month and mine says it's today, you know, we're going to have to take a look at these things. And that's about all I can say on it, you know, in this time. I'm not hiding from that. I can't answer all of the questions here any more than a person who accepts the general theory of evolution can answer all of the questions that I might have. But I think there are some serious things that need to be looked at there.
So you're saying, that you then don't have a conviction about how old you think the Earth is?
Well, I know it's older than history. Yeah, if I was going to give you it took me a long time to come to that conclusion. If I showed you my statement of evidence, you'd realize immediately that I have begged the question in the favor of the person who accepted the general theory. My point is that the Earth is obviously older than man's written history because we talk about prehistory. And I don't know how old it is. You know, Bishop Usher didn't do us any service by taking the... let's see if I can find that real quick. The problem with the genealogy, what he did and some other people like Lightfoot, is that they took all of these statements where it had the word so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so that we skip over because we can't pronounce the names. Remember that in your Bible reading? And they assumed that that was a father-son relationship in every case. And the reality is that it's not. So the Bible really can't be used. And here's a comparison. It'll show you in 1 Chronicles 6, 6 through 10, and Ezra 7, 3 through 4, where they're dealing with the same genealogy, that there's a whole bunch of generation skips. And they were not necessarily concerned with giving every name in the sequence, which sometimes we teach people in Bible study. You know, the Jews were very careful about their genealogy. Now, sometimes they skip generations. They weren't concerned about every generation. So what it boils down to is that you can't take the Bible and find out how old the Earth was. You know, there are some things about radiocarbon-14 dating that make me believe, well, not every creationist believes it, but make me believe that the Earth is less than 50,000 years old. But that's my personal judgment, you know, and I believe that on faith.
I understand that, of course, the evolution of the biggest division here in order to get that.
Right.
But why?
Did everybody hear that?
The question about why is it even important? I mean, and I appreciate that. I do want to give you this quote. George Wald said, excuse me, in his article in Scientific American on the origin of the Earth, that time was the hero of the plot. What we regard as impossible on the basis of human experience is meaningless here. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible. The possible probable, and the probable virtually certain. One only has to wait. Time performs a miracle. But he was referring to the general theory of evolution. Given enough time, okay, which is like given enough time, Madeline Murray O'Hara will become a Christian kind of thing, you know. You know, that argument just won't hold up. If something is truly impossible, no amount of time is going to produce it. And so that argument, they just realized that they need a whole lot more time. What has happened is that a lot of people supporting the creationist position have taken some real hard views on this. They're out there teaching that as a matter of scientific fact, the Earth is only about 10,000 years old, and I can't take that position. You know, I don't agree with what they're using to support it, but let me tell you some things that you might think about. If the Earth and the Moon came into existence at essentially the same time, and meteorites are crashing into the moon all the time, how much dust do you think would be there? A bunch. Over my head for sure, and probably over some of you who are tall. Now, when Armstrong, that's right, took the first step, nobody knew. The lunar landing vehicle was prepared for meters and meters of dust because the old Earth, the people who believed in the old Earth and that the moon had been here for millions and billions of years, believed that when we tried to take a step, we'd sink out of sight through these meters of dust that had been produced over the millions of years of meteorites eroding the surface of the moon. You look at the pictures and you'll notice that even after he put his foot down, he did not take his hand off the ladder. Because he didn't know either. And Gary was in news at that time, and he remembers how nervous all these news people were as to what was going to happen. Because this old idea was that if it's that old, it's just going to be meters and meters of dust, and he's just going to go... And it didn't happen. And they don't know how to explain that. That is one of those little things that actually points to a relatively young age for the moon. And most people have always taken the position that the moon and the Earth came into the existence at the same time, either as separate entities or the moon was ripped out of the Earth about the Pacific Ocean, you know, and is a satellite. And it didn't make any sense. That's why these rock datings are so interesting, because everybody just says, well, the Earth is what, 4.5 billion years old as determined by radioactive carbon dating. I'm not carbon, but radioactive dating method, the uranium lead form. And on the moon, which should have been the same age, they got everything from 2 million to 28 billion. And it just doesn't hang together. There's just enough room for doubt. Let me ask you, What is faith? Well, let's just make one comment on what faith is. You know, faith, that we use that term all the time. I was going to Costa Rica, and I had to fly in a jet plane. I didn't know it was going to be a jet plane because all my professor told me was we were going on lots of airlines. You know, and I never heard of that. I heard of Delta, and I never heard of lots of airlines. And I had my visions of this, you know, leather-covered two-seater, you know, that we were going to fly across the Gulf. Well, it turned out to be a real jet plane with a real pilot. And I always did believe that I was going to get there safely. Right? I believed that. I had faith that I was going to get from Miami to San Jose safely. But the demonstration of my faith in that was when I was willing to risk my life by getting on the plane and doing it. Now, that's faith. Faith is a demonstrated thing. And my point is that there are some serious implications to these two particular points of view, both in this life and in the life to come, if you believe in the life to come, right? Serious implications. You need to study it hard before you risk your life both here and there on these particular issues, on radiocarbon dating and things like that. You need to take a look at the problems that are there, the assumptions that are there.
This is Jay.
Good.
You were somewhat critical of the Creation Research Society and the position they've taken. As a whole, would you recommend the book that Morris and Gish and others have written, or would you say they're unreliable?
You know, that's one of those things where if I make a sweep of the hand statement, I lose, because I can't do that. Number one, I haven't studied all of their books. The best single source of factual information is Weissong's book, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it, because I'll send back a bibliography, and Gary will have it. Okay, I mean, it'll be here and people can come get it. Of books that I am aware of and that some of my other friends who do this are aware of. My point is this, that they seem to be taking a position like they're going to prove scientifically that special cremation occurred. And if that's where they're coming from, I disagree with that. Because I think it's outside of the realm of science. And I think that's a futile attempt. Now, I'm sorry. Yeah, the general theory of evolution. Thank you. Somebody ought to point that out, that people need to preface that way, either general or special. Yeah, I fell into my own trap there. It was easy for me to do.
Could I ask one more question about the book? As a non-scientist, one who just tries to read and learn a few things to be helpful, the most helpful book I've read personally is both the Data Masters.
I think it's excellent.
And I noticed you have that quote.
I think Klotz and Bolton David Heiser and some of those older books on the subject are classic. They have the arguments there. Okay, and a lot of the things that I learned about making this distinction between evidence and interpretation really came from reading those books. Pete? You mean in the human condition? Well, I mean, genetically, that can be explained, you know, and, you know, if you will check on that, I think you'll find out that those that are supposed to have scales, those aren't scales, and they look like scales, but that condition is not, that's not a throwback. That's just an abnormality, like the elephant man. Okay, that's, why wouldn't you call the elephant man a throwback? Well, because we don't know of anything. I forget what you call that thick skin. You know, where they get that big, thick, heavy skin. It just looks like scales on their body, and they use them in sideshows so often. But it's not really scales, and that's not a throwback. You know, and you make a lot of assumptions to assume that if your webbing is a little longer genetically between your fingers, that's a throwback to when you were an amphibian. That takes a lot. I mean, there's just a lot of assumptions involved in that. The point is, it's a genetic mutation.
Alan?
General theory of evolution and special creation, both are outside of the realm of scientific proof. I think it's a guarantee that you're going to either believe it by faith or you aren't. I mean, you know, I believe that God created. I believe that God is and a rewarder of them that diligently seek him, and I believe that on faith.
It seems to me that passage is the foundation of what we want to give, because it says, by faith we understand, and it identifies the faith.
Right. Like Psalm 33, you know, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made. God speaking the worlds into existence, and then a statement made, let the inhabitants of the earth stand in awe of him. You know, our basis for belief being the creative power of God as revealed in the creation has been an argument for the existence of God, but you still believe in faith. That's my point. And not everybody has that faith. Now, I don't mind people having different faiths. It's that, you know, they've got to make those decisions themselves. I just don't like a person who's standing on faith to say they're standing on science. That's the problem that we're having right now.
We got just a few more minutes. Are any of the young people here have any questions? Maybe some things that you have come across in the classroom or things that you have confronted? And I mean young people.
My age or young?
No, my age or young.
Oh.
Let's maybe just one or two other questions, and then we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yes, sir. The living clay. Yeah, I just heard about that. So, okay, I mean, that just... I get my information through the Today Show, and they just got it on there. That's so much easier than the biological abstract. Let me make this point about this whole concept of life evolving out of non-living matter. The standing hypothesis is that there was this primeval ocean. You know, we had an atmosphere of methane and things like that that we don't have today. And under those conditions, with lightning, you know, life came into existence. And then the life that was brought into existence changed the environmental conditions to what we have today, which are completely different from what was there. And one of the things that the proponents of the general theory have always fallen back on is, well, you know, we've done some of these experiments to imitate that kind of environment. All right, but the fact that the environment has changed and the atmosphere has changed has always been their way of escaping, you know, you asking them, well, why don't you see it happening today? Now, on this thing about the clay, they won't have that. There'd be no reason then, if it was under atmospheric conditions like we have now with clay, then perhaps they should be able to demonstrate it happening in our environment today. They won't be able to go back and say, well, those conditions don't exist anymore. Now, I'm not totally familiar. Do you know whether they are postulating these kinds of environmental conditions with oxygen as a primary constituent of the atmosphere, or the old theory of, you know, the methane and all of that gases in the atmosphere? It'll be fine.
Previous experiments indicate crystal-like patterns of clay can also undergo growth, self-replication, throughout the fundamental life process. Researchers said this suggests clay may have formed a kind of proto-life, providing a molecular pattern that helps to bring about the
growth. Right, well, they must be postulating still the same kind of atmosphere that is in the other one. The only problem with that is there's nothing you can see to support that, and no experiments you can do. It's outside of science. It's just simply outside of scientific. All you do is you look at the fact. You know what we do? We tear life apart, and we examine it, and then we put it back together again and say we've created it. That's just about the way we've done it in science. And I just say that, as dumb as I am about building, if you give me all the houses in Dayton to tear apart, you know, and examine on how they're put together, and give me all those building materials that eventually I put a house back together again. But that wouldn't mean I created it, or that it could have happened spontaneously. And really, we're taking intelligence back into the natural system, and we're just ripping it apart and putting it back and experimenting. But that still does not answer the basic questions of how it all got here. And all of that ends up still being a matter of faith. Because nobody's ever seen that process. They just get the postulated mechanism that they can't demonstrate.
One more question. Do you have anybody in particular?
No, I'm not going to be the one.
Yeah, go ahead.
What one thing would you say to me that young people are in life this morning, as they go into the class, and they're taught the theory of evolution, perhaps by a teacher who may or may not have any background in religion,
number one, learn it all. You know, what I tried to do was to learn the general theory of evolution and the special theory and all that stuff about genetics and stuff even better than my professor knew. That's what I tried to do. And I tried to learn to make his arguments better than he could make them and then come back with an alternative. And they can't answer that. Okay? You don't have to say, I'm not going to take this test because you've got evolutionary questions. Let's just answer the question. You know, give them back their theories. Who said we can't study theories? And there's nothing wrong with standing up and saying, look, I don't believe this is the only way, and I know some people who'd be willing to come up here and present this from the other position. Would you be willing? I think a high school or even a junior high student could ask their teacher, would you be willing to have someone like David Aiken come in here and talk to the science teachers about this alternative view? And I think that's something they could do. And they still have to do. I think you'll find a lot of the teachers will respect that kind of conviction. If the problem is not coming with junior high and high school teachers as much as it is in the university. And I just tell you, that's where you really, if you go into a university and you want to get a degree in anthropology or psychology or geology or biology, if you do not accept the general theory of evolution, you will be discriminated against until they can get you out of there. That's what's happening now. And a lot of them don't even realize why they're doing it, or maybe that they are doing it to the students. But that's where the real strong feelings are coming from. And I found that I just have had no problem getting into places to talk. People are willing, obviously from these surveys, a lot of people are aware of this issue and are willing to hear both sides. You get 85% of your society saying they kind of like to see both sides presented. Now let me say something to you. Number one, I appreciate coming up here. Number two, there was no way in the world I could cover everything I'd like to cover with you in this two and a half hour period. I normally cover this in 5 hours, where I go through all those six areas. I mean, it just takes that much, no question. The fastest I can do it is about 2 hours when the people have a very strong science background, like college professors. And I don't apologize for that. It's a difficult subject. It covers a lot of bases. But I hope this whets your appetite. And I hope it makes you see that not everybody who's opposed to the general theory of evolution is doing it simply because they believe the Bible, but because it's a matter of interpreting scientific evidence, and there's no reason to be pushed one way or the other except by your basic philosophical presupposition. I believe on faith, and I make no apology for trying to examine that evidence and know it and interpret it from this point of view, and I don't think any of you all ought to either. Not everybody is faced with this. Some of you who are older, it has never been a problem in your life. It is not a problem now. It will never be a problem to your faith, and you may not understand why we've gone to all of this difficulty. In the same way that some people have to deal with premillennial theory, and other people never deal with it their whole life, and some people have read a debate on once saved, always saved, and others haven't, and I mean, different doctrines come up and have their heyday at different times. But I tell you, for most young people, this is a real thing, because it comes up in science classes and English classes and history classes and sociology classes and anthropology classes, and it's been used as kind of a basis for everything that is taught in the school system. And they are faced with it. And that's why we're trying to deal with it. I don't expect everybody to try to develop whatever expertise like I have developed. But there will be a few who will. There will be a few who will. And there are people like that who are willing to go and talk to science teachers and help you. You may not be able to do it yourself. But there are people like myself who are willing to go and help you do it. And just don't forget that that resource is available. All right, I know it's been a difficult subject. Y'all have been very patient with me. And I know that there's a lot of unanswered questions and perhaps some areas that I have to slight. I don't want you to think that I was afraid of the area. I'm not. And I have my materials on it here. I just couldn't get through all of that. And if you have further questions, you know, perhaps some other time I can come back into this area and we can go into it more completely. Or, you know, I'll be working on my literature. I mean, I'm making that a real life effort on my part to do videotapes and, you know, Bible classroom material as well as college and high school classroom material. You know, and we'll just see how people receive that. But I really appreciate you all's attention and your interest in coming out here today.
Well, we certainly appreciate everyone being here, too. Does anyone know how many we had? Was there a... Oh, that's good. 175 people. And we just appreciate so much you being here. David is undertaking a financial venture to prepare some of this material. I think it might be encouraging to him if we would let him know how we feel about that, that we would be interested in buying the books and having the videotapes and all of that kind of thing. And I'm sure we'll be receiving information as the time comes when that material is available. It'll be material, my understanding is the videotape will be similar to the kind of thing we've had this morning. On a series of videotapes, and you'd be able to take that even into to the classroom and that kind of thing. So we just appreciate David being here so much and the effort that he's undertaken.
What do I do?
He doesn't work, he just preaches.
I always preach full time on the side.
We have a gospel meeting coming up here. I think it'll be 2 weeks from tomorrow is when it starts with Brother Peter Wilson doing the preaching. That's April the 21st to the 26th, I believe. And we'd like to invite anyone who can to come back. The brethren at New Carlisle asked me to announce that they have a meeting April the 14th to the 19th in New Carlisle with Brother Jim Lee doing the preaching there. I know there are a number of other meetings. Are there any other announcements, just very quickly? Art Ogden, that'll be, the 14th? Yeah, okay. And Haines Street? Okay. Knollwood's meeting is, I think, I'm afraid it's the same week as ours, isn't it? 21st to the 26th, and who's? Larry Hayford, right? All right. Anybody else? Anything else? We're glad you're here. We have a room reserved, if you can, at the Cambridge Inn Cafeteria on Far Hill, which is Highway 48 in Centerville. If you don't know how to get there from here, just go back down Bigger Road to the first traffic light. Well, it'll probably be easier to go to the second traffic light, which is Whip Road. I think that's right, isn't it? And turn right and stay on that till you get to Far Hill. And then turn left, and you'll see just down a block or so, you'll see the Cambridge Inn Cafeteria on the left. Just as many of you as can come and have a great roast beef special on Saturday. So I'm getting kind of tired of it myself, but that's all I can afford. Are there any other announcements? We're glad you're here, and we appreciate your presence. And we'd like to hope get to see some of you during the gospel meetings coming up. We wouldn't dare let this many good singers get out of the building without singing at least one song. Brother Jim Grushon, one of our elders, is going to lead us in singing Our God, He is Alive. And Brother Aud McKee came all the way from Knoxville, Tennessee, just to be with us today. He's holding a meeting in Evendale. And that meeting goes through this weekend, I believe, doesn't it? So it'll be tonight at 7:30?
Yes, and they're playing tomorrow at 2:30.
At Evendale. All right. Brother McKee, after the song, would you lead us in a word of prayer before we're dismissed? All right. Let's all stand while we sing. Let me make one quick announcement, primarily for our members. Brother Cliff Harris's mother passed away last night. We just learned that this morning. And so we want to keep that in mind, whatever the members here can do, and I'll certainly remember it in our prayers. I apologize for not remembering that.
728B. 728B.